Blue River Hotel, Victoria Island, Lagos, Nigeria. October 31st, 2016. 11:24 p.m. Shigidi found himself in what looked like a lavish hotel room, dimly lit by a solitary bulbous sodium vapor lamp burning in the corner, like a miniature setting sun. He was standing beside a king-size bed where two naked women lay vined together, sleeping quietly on what looked like thousand-thread count sheets. Smooth and lustrous, a mess of clothes, papers, bottles, and a vibrator that looked like a purple bullet were strewn on the carpeted floor. When he caught his own ugly reflection in a large rectangular mirror set in an old mahogany frame carved with leaf and flower designs, he hastily looked away and focused back on the couple in the bed. The first woman, the one closest to him, was shorter, thinner, and looked older. Deep lines ran along her plump skin like the surface of a dried pond. Her face was long and oval. Her hair was done up into thin braids, held together with a red band. Wedding ring on finger, slight and slender, she appeared to be in her late 50s or early 60s. She was good-looking, athletic, like a distance runner or a triathlete. According to the work slip, she was Shigidi's target for the evening, courtesy of a jealous husband. Jealous enough to want his cheating wife dead. He'd made a significant sacrifice. Perhaps that was why Eshu Elegba had brought it himself. It was so often family and friends that engaged his services. There was something about the woman she was with, however, that drew Shigidi's attention so intensely he could not resist. His eyes slid from the object of his task to her, and the first thing he noticed about her was just how sleek her fingers were, resting on the older woman's abdomen. They were svelte and finely crafted, like cigarettes. She had radiant ebony skin that gleamed in the faint light, and on her head was a corona of long black curls splayed about her on the pillow. Her eyes were closed, and her lips were full and blood red. "She is spectacularly beautiful." It occurred to Shigidi that she was the kind of woman some of the pettier and more vindictive orishas in the company would have used to torment a king or a prideful man who had offended them with lust and madness before fully destroying him, back when people still believed in the orishas enough for them to take such an active role in human lives. "Focus," he mouthed when he realized he had been staring. "Focus, Shigidi. You have work to do." He stepped towards the bed, readying himself to press the breath from this woman whose husband wanted her dead. He wondered if it was the fact that she was cheating on him that had driven him to contact Ababalawo and ask for her death, or if there was something more to it. He'd observed that human men generally had fragile egos when it came to women, and Nigerian men particularly so. It was probably the fact that she was cheating on him with another woman that had done it. "Focus. What do I know about woman wahala anyway? This is none of my business. Just do the job and go." Shigidi clambered onto the bed, using the bedside table for support, and almost exclaimed at the smooth feel of the sheets on his skin. Luxurious indeed. Nothing like the rough touch of his raffia mat and wrapper, or even the plain, unremarkable feel of the bedding in the Abeokuta house he'd just visited. A flash of memory hit him, and he felt a tinge of pity for the other woman. She would wake up in such delightful surroundings, beside the corpse of someone she loved, or at least liked enough to sleep with. It was a pity almost strong enough to become familiar guilt, but he pushed that out of his mind. It wasn't personal, just spirit business. He reached to move the gorgeous woman's hand so he could sit on the older woman's abdomen and slowly crush her lungs while he wove her deepest fears into vivid visions of terror. That was when he noticed that her chest did not rise and fall steadily, as one would expect. She was already barely breathing. Shigidi took a closer look at her face and saw that it was frozen in a rictus of pleasure. A sense of wrongness settled upon him. That's not right. Something is not right. He hesitated, and he scanned the room again. Nothing particularly strange jumped out at him, and eventually urgency overtook his caution. He needed to get this done. He made to move the woman's hand again. Only when his hand touched her, she shot up out of the bed and into the air like an erupting volcano, hot, naked, and with unexpected force. What? Shigiri lost his balance, fell back into the silken sheets, and slid off the bed. A woman latched onto the ceiling with claws that sprang from her long, slender fingers, which, like the rest of her body, were now covered in razor-thin scales that reflected the dim light. Shigiri stared in horror as long membranous wings sprouted out of her bare back, seamlessly obscuring her contorted spine. Her neck twisted at an impossible angle as she stared back down at him. "You must be Shigiri," she rumbled, her voice abrasive, like sandpaper in his ears. "Shit!" he exclaimed, once he'd finally processed the situation and realized what, even if he still didn't know who exactly she was. A succubus. A bloody succubus! He knew about her kind. They were freelancers, unaffiliated with any spirit company. One of several independent spirit entities. They did not trade in belief or prayers or offerings. They obtained spirits directly from humans and used them for their own sustenance. Some of them, like succubi, used seduction and exploited the temporary exposure of the spirit at the peak of sexual pleasure to siphon it out of the unsuspecting humans. Others used verbal trickery and deceptive marketing to get vulnerable humans to hand over their spirits willingly in private contracts and arrangements. Some took the spirits by force. Whatever form they came in, independent spirit entities were reviled by the spirit company management and by most of Shigiri's own colleagues. He was indifferent to them, but in that moment, the only thing he could think was that he absolutely did not want one of them undercutting his job. "You know my name? Fine. What is yours, then?" he asked the thing that had been the woman on the bed. It still was, in many ways. The creature had retained all her voluptuousness, despite the wings and the scales and the piercing yellow eyes. She was a vision of corrupted beauty, both alluring and terrifying. "Noma," she said, her voice vibrating like the ground beneath a besieged city. "My real name is Neama, but I prefer to be called Noma." Ah, she was one of them then, one of the originals of her kind, those that had been cast out. A small measure of fear crept up on him, like a touch of ice to his spine. "I've been mistaken for a demon. Now here I am, face to face with one. Ha! Life is funny sometimes." "Noma." He jutted his chin to indicate the woman on the bed, barely breathing. "This woman's life is mine." He raised his scarred and tattooed hand and waved his palm through the air, displaying the message that had appeared in his work slip in bold green spirit particles. She laughed. Shigiri lowered his hand and furrowed his brow. "Those documents mean nothing to me, nightmare god. Organized spirit company nonsense. My ways are older and much simpler. We had an agreement. She has lain with me, enjoyed my pleasures, and so her spirit belongs to me now. I was just about to claim it," she said. You cannot do that," Shigiri protested. "I am required to kill her so her spirit can be claimed by the company. Please don't make this difficult." Noma twisted again on the ceiling to allow her upper body to hang low, her taut muscles rippling underneath the scales. Staring directly at him, she smiled and let out a sound somewhere between a laugh and a growl, like she was both amused and annoyed at the same time. "Can't you find someone else to feed on tonight, huh?" he asked, hopeful. "No," she said. "I told you we had an agreement, and I've already invested myself, fulfilled my part of the bargain." She glanced at the woman's face, frozen smile of ecstasy still in place. I always collect what's owed to me. I see. Her ever-present smile made Shikiri uneasy. He shuffled his feet awkwardly. But I can't let you do that.
Then it seems we have a problem, little nightmare god, she added.
Yes, we do, he confirmed, sighing heavily as he mentally prepared himself for a fight he suspected he would lose. He had only a few powers that would be useful against her kind, and none of them possessed sufficient potency to do any real damage to her physical or spiritual configuration. His was the realm of dreams and nightmares, not the hard and tangible world around them where physical and spirit particles held their forms steadily. He was at his most powerful and complete in the in-between places of the minds of men and gods, in the subconscious where he could project his imagination into unsupervised thoughts and rearrange them. But it seemed that she was leaving him no choice. He looked around the room for a good location to deal his best blow against the beautiful evil creature that confronted him. Finding none, he began to back away from the bed into the corner. There, at least, he could avoid an attack from behind. He wondered what the chances were of an aspect of Eshu Elegba coming back to check on him.
Close to zero, probably.
Shigiri kept his eyes trained on Noma, and as he did, he noticed that there was something strange about her, beyond her horrific beauty or the fact that she was perched on the ceiling, her pupils trained on him with an amused intensity. No, he had seen stranger than her familiar form. The leathery wings and haunting yellow eyes were elements he had played with in constructing many nightmares to terrify people on behalf of his clients, or even to conjure in the minds of other Orishas for a drunken laugh at the spirit company's annual end-of-season parties. No, there was something else, something subtler. It was the look in her eyes behind the false mask of amusement. It was a look intimately familiar to him, one he'd seen in mirrors and reflective surfaces since he'd first been created. It was sadness, loneliness. Her eyes still glowed bright as the flames of a forest fire, but as he continued to look at them, he started to see it more clearly. There was a turmoil in the depth of those fiery eyes, just as there was in his own eyes every time he saw his reflection. They stared at each other. And then Noma blinked twice. She fanned her wings gently, the motion so slow and deliberate it was almost imperceptible except for the sight of it pulsing through her hair.
"You're not happy, are you?"
Her voice was no longer harsh and trembling. It had suddenly gone soft and genteel. "With your life, I mean." "No," he said rapidly and honestly, surprising himself. He stopped retreating but continued to hold her in his gaze.
"So, she's seen it too. If you gaze long enough into the eyes of the succubus gazes back into you."
"I understand, and it only makes what comes next even harder," she said, closing her eyes slowly, like she was sliding them shut. And then, "I'm sorry, little nightmare god." She moved so quickly that following the yellow trace of her gave Shigiri an instant headache. She dropped down from the ceiling, used the short pulse of her wings to catch the air and lift her body back up as she arched her back and thrust out her legs like a gymnast. It almost looked like a dance. And then she shot straight at him like a flesh and spirit missile, feet first. Shigiri had never seen anything like it. Shit! He only had enough time to tense before she crashed into him. Her feet clutched to his shoulders with sharp claws as he was pushed back into the wall. Shigiri struggled, grabbing onto her ankles, but it was futile. He could feel blood and loose clay flesh dripping down into his armpits, and his arms began to stiffen.
He only realized what she was doing when he heard buzzing and saw the cluster of bright yellow lights that surrounded her begin to accumulate around the claws of her feet.
Is she physically manipulating her own spirit particles?
What are you doing? Shigiri asked. She did not respond, so he tried to push harder, but by then it was too late. The pressure on his limbs had grown beyond his ability to resist. He was too small, too weak, too unskilled.
I can't fight her like this. There must be another way.
He could barely move, and the buzzing was loud in his ears. He closed his eyes and tried to tune it out, to listen instead to the faded breaths of the woman on the bed as he projected his imagination toward her. Her thoughts were a jumble of still, lifeless threads, resonating with only one emotion. The woman was still sleeping, but not the normal slumber of mortals. She was in a kind of suspended state. Her consciousness perched precariously on the peak of pleasure Noma had taken her to and left her on, her spirit loose and easy to pry out at the succubus's convenience. Shigiri tried to catch the flow of her breath and use it as an entry point into her mind. Noma had released his shoulders, but he barely noticed. He was completely focused on his task, searching for something, anything, in the woman's subconscious that he could use to gain an advantage.
I might not be able to beat the predator, but I can steal her prey.
He found what he was looking for. Gray, the color of a half-forgotten memory. A memory of sitting at the back of a room while a man in a frayed navy blue suit drew something on a dusty chalkboard and wagged his finger. Astral projection. He was telling them something about astral projection, that it was an evil practiced by witches and agents of Satan. This was a Sunday school memory, the man in her memory describing the loosening of the bond between body and spirit. Quoting from the Bible, "The silver cord be loosened." Ecclesiastes. It didn't matter. Just more Christian doctrine used to reinforce their dominant market share. What mattered was that she believed. Shigiri sensed a faint hint of faith in the concept, a fear that it was true. This was a long shot, something he'd never done before, but he was willing to try. The sleeping woman believed that her spirit could be untethered from her body. That could be enough. It would have to be enough. Shigiri focused on that thin thread in the woman's mind as Noma turned her back on him, confident he was defeated, and drifted back to the bed, puffing her wings slightly. Shigiri twisted the thread of belief and memory in the woman's mind, wrapping it around itself to reinforce it until it felt strong enough to carry the weight of a nightmare. And then Shigiri wrapped it around her subconscious mind. The woman twitched on the bed as she slipped out of her lust-induced fugue and began to dream vividly of being a young woman back in that classroom, trying to project her spirit out of her body to see if the pastor's words were true and realizing, in terror, that they were. Dreams can be very convincing, especially when woven from faith. Noma saw the twitch and the flicker of eyelids and spun around to face Shigiri. "What are you doing?" In her dream, the terrified woman on the bed tried to pull her hovering spirit back, but it was too late. Shigiri smiled as he used his imagination to seize it and pull it into a cage he had constructed in his own mind, an illusion of a clearing in the evil forest that bordered Orun. Her nightmare merged with his subconscious. Her spirit was now fully encased in his realm, out of Noma's reach, as long as he could keep up the illusion. Noma stared at him curiously.
Impressive trick. What was that?
She was asleep, dreaming, so I induced the spirit-body decoupling, Shigiri said, holding back a smile. She relaxed her shoulders and folded her wings.
I see. How exactly?
She already believed it was possible. I just encouraged it.
Right, but it's not real. I could slit her throat and end the nightmare.
Maybe, but our dreams are now interlinked. I don't know what will happen if you cut the connection from one end. Her spirit may be caught in one of the in-between places, or destroyed, or become part of me forever. I don't know. I've never done this before, but desperate times, desperate measures, Abby. Do you want to risk it? My body may be small and weak, but my imagination is persistent. Norma nodded. The woman began to convulse on the bed as Shigidi sensed fear expanding to fill the void within her. All right, Norma said. Let's assume I don't just kill her and then kill you and see what happens. Let's say I accept this is a stalemate. What do you want to happen next? Let's make a deal, Shigidi said. What kind of deal? Let me take her spirit and complete my job, and I won't report your activities to the spirit company. Norma laughed. You may be clever with your little nightmare tricks, but you're not a great bargainer, are you? Because that's a terrible offer. That's the best I can do. I need her spirit, huh? I need to complete my job. No, you don't, Norma spat out and flared her wings out again, like she was expanding. Your job. You keep talking about your job. The job that you so clearly hate, that gives you no joy. She paused and fanned her wings just enough to drift herself slowly back up to the ceiling. Shigidi's eyes followed, trying to maintain focus on both the dream of the woman's spirit in his head and the balletic movement before him. She turned just before her head touched the ceiling and latched back on with her claws, as if she felt more comfortable there, or perhaps was preparing another attack. Have you ever had sex, Shigidi? She asked. Her voice was low. What does that have to do with anything, huh? He retorted, confused. She didn't reply immediately. Time passed, as though she were weighing her answer carefully. Shigidi's eyes, which had been so riveted to hers, slipped free to take in the arch of her naked spine, now angled so that the dim light of the bulb hit her forehead and shoulders and breasts. When she spoke, her words surprised him even more. I can break your contract, she said quietly. I can free you from your connection to the Orisha Spirit Company. Shigidi tilted his head to the side, feeling the strain of her binding his shoulders. What do you mean? She smiled again, the smile not reaching her eyes. Exactly what I said. I can break your contract with your spirit company and make us alike, little nightmare god. You're clever and sad and creative and reckless, and you have potential. If you lie with me, I can transform you. You will no longer be as you are now. You know I possess powers of both extraction and transformation, given the right spirit particle stimulation. Or don't they tell you that about us in your stupid company meetings? I have turned angels into demons, men into gods. Living into dead, Shigidi added with another jut of his jaw. Yes, that too, same as you. We aren't so different, and you know it. She continued, it is costly, but it can be done. So, give me her spirit and lie with me. You will take on a new form, one I can guarantee you will actually like. Suspicion and curiosity rumbled in Shigidi, trapped inside his earthen flesh like two warring animals. He couldn't believe what he was hearing. It seemed too good to be true. And he had lived long enough to know that in the spirit business, nothing truly good came without a steep price. Is this a trick, Norma? He asked. Not at all. It is an honest offer. You let me have this woman's spirit, and in return, I will change you and free you of your obligations. We don't need to keep fighting over it. Her body rippled as the protective scales on her flesh receded and the bulk of her aggressive and fearsome persona regressed, leaving the supple skin and the perfect nakedness that Shigidi had first seen when he saw her on the bed. She freed the claws of one hand from the ceiling, leaving deep black gashes in it, and pointed her finger at him.
Once you are free, we can even work together. It's not so different from what you do now, you know. You will still take human spirits, but you can do whatever you want with them first, not just sit on them till they suffocate, which is a bit uncreative, if I may say so, given what I've seen you do. And you will work for yourself, not for that corporation's psychopath Shongo or his absentee manager, Oloru. You can travel beyond these shores, too. There is so much more variety to spirits in the rest of Africa and beyond. Have you ever been to Egypt, Mozambique, Algeria, Norway?
Shigidi shook his head. The blood dripping down his shoulders was cold and sticky and uncomfortable.
Oh, there's so much more than this. She drew a circle in the air with her finger. A whole world of spirits to enjoy. And you will no longer be ugly. You can take on a new form. The form I'm sure you've so potently imagined and tried to make real. Handsome, tall, muscled, admired by all who set their eyes upon you. Tell me you haven't dreamed about it.
Shigidi's eyes widened in his head, inflated with imagination.
I have, he whispered.
Noma waited, watching her words sink into him like fish hooks. She pursed her lips, allowing them to curl just at the edges, so it looked like a pout, and then she said, I don't want to hurt you any more. I don't want to risk destroying one so skilled at manipulating emotions, just as I do merely for this meager mortal spirit. No need for waste. You already said you wanted a deal, so let's make a good one. I see something in you, and I think you see something in me. Lust is not that different from fear, you know. So let us both gain something from this encounter. Lie with me, Shigidi.
He considered her proposal as he took in her polished ebony skin, her long and gracile arms that seemed like they had been carved by the hands of a particularly precise god. Could he too be viewed with such awe, with such intense desire? Perhaps if he believed her, if he lay with her, gave up the spirit he was holding hostage in his imagination and abandoned his job. Or he could keep trying to fight her and probably lose. If she knocked him unconscious or did enough damage to him, he would probably lose the bond between his mind and that of the woman lying on the bed. Then he'd be dead. Or worse, forced to return to the office with an assortment of injuries to face the bite of Oya's caustic insults. There was no way he would meet his quarterly spirit collection objectives, and the company would probably dock his prey pay for the next 6 months or year. He'd have to continue to work while being starved of sustenance, without even the sweet oblivion of alcohol. The thought of it all saturated him with exhaustion. He shook his head. The sensible thing to do was to take her offer, but he suspected that there was something else at play, some ulterior motive. He'd seen the querying sadness in her eyes even before she'd attacked him. Was it a ploy, a trick, or even an elaborate test of his loyalty by the spirit company? Eshu Elegba had brought him here, after all. He didn't know. But he wasn't going to allow himself to be used in anyone's game so easily. Besides, she already said I wasn't a great bargainer. No, he said. Her pout widened into an ear-to-ear grin that couldn't quite mask her surprise. No, she asked, slightly tilting her head so the light accentuated her cheekbones. She seemed unruffled by his refusal. He couldn't tell if she was amused by it, given that he was trapped, or was she simply unused to being denied. No, I will not lie with you. I will not accept your offer. Not until you tell me what's really in it for you.
What's in it for me? she repeated, as the mask slowly fell from her face. Honestly, I don't. And then she seemed to gather her thoughts. I told you, you're not like the other spirit company gods. That trick you're using to hold her spirit, it's unusual. It should be impossible, really. A corporate god would never have even thought to try it. You wanted honesty, here it is. I think you have potential. You're molded from Olorun spirit clay, unlike the others. You could be far more successful than any of them if you were unshackled. You could be so much more than what you are now. And we could do great things together. Of course I want that, if I can have it. She swiped her hand through the air. I think you know, deep down, you're more like me than you are like them, your colleagues in the company. You're an outcast. Unconventional. Look, even if you don't believe me, if you don't believe any of that, don't you want to be beautiful? The spirit market isn't what it used to be. Faith has been falling for a long time, and of all the spirit companies I have encountered, your company is one of the worst performing. Wasteful, disorganized, mismanaged. You aren't a priority there, and you know it. I can see it in your eyes. At least if you're one of us, you will feed directly from the source. The more of us freelancers, and the less of them there are, the better. There is safety in numbers. It's that simple. Come on now, make the smart choice. So there it was, Shigiri thought. Safety. Behind all the looks and the words and the violence, she wanted a capable partner because she was scared. Alone. Shigiri understood that. Fear. What she really needed was a glorified bodyguard or an attending companion. Still, given that, he couldn't resist the allure of a chance to no longer be ugly. A freshly harvested spirit was worth the faith of a dozen believers. But the consumption of spirits was tightly regulated within the companies. It could only be done when requested by a human prayer or summoning. If he took her offer, he would be free of all that. He barely had enough adherents who still believed in him to get by, and what few he had were generally vengeful, petty creatures, like the greedy business partner whose bidding had taken him to Abekuta, or the jealous husband whose offering had brought him to this hotel. The days when kings and great rulers had prayed to him to strike fear into the minds of their enemies were long gone. Now he had to rely on his share of whatever spirits he and the other minor gods reaped with the rest of the company. The times had indeed changed, and perhaps it was time for him to change along with them. My options are limited anyway. Take a risk for beauty and freedom, or take the certainty of pain and continued unhappiness. In the end, the choice really was, as she said, a simple one to make. "Can you really make me handsome?" he asked. Noma snapped her fingers, and a burst of yellow spirit particles followed like sparks from a lighter. They hung in the air like fireflies. She pointed down at the supine body of the woman whose projected spirit Shigiri was still holding in his mind. The particles streamed down onto her face. When they touched her lips, they disappeared, leaving her face strange and mouthless. "I can remake anyone," she said, "once they have established a bond with me." That was all the push he needed. Shigiri nodded his head. "Then yes, I accept your offer." Her pout returned and Shigiri's skin tightened. She retracted the claws of her other hand and her feet, allowing her body to descend slowly from the perch on the ceiling, with gentle pulses of her wings, gracefully, like a grand butterfly. She landed on the other side of the bed and sat with her back to him. Her wings folded and collapsed into slits, which opened in her back and disappeared once the wings were gone. "Release her from her nightmare. Return her spirit." Shigiri forced out a smile, trying his best to sound confident, even though he didn't feel it.
Release me first. Ha! We need to trust each other for this deal to work.
Exactly, he replied. We both need to demonstrate trust. Ladies first.
It was her turn to smile then. Fine. She raised her right hand and snapped her fingers. The yellow spirit particles that bound Shigidi to the wall retreated and agglomerated into a ball with a crinkling sound, swirling around an invisible nexus, like a miniature galaxy. The weight of his body settled back onto the floor, and he exhaled deeply, ignoring the pain in his shoulders and upper arms. He kept his eyes on her, amazed as the mass of her spirit particles recoiled back into her hand and settled into her body, with a shimmer as though they had been absorbed through her pores.
I've never seen anyone, human or god, manipulate spirit particles like that before.
Noma thrust her head back and lay on her side, crossing her legs in front of her so that the line of her thigh rose over the sleeping woman's spiritless body. She placed a finger over the place where the woman's mouth used to be.
Your turn.
Shigidi nodded. He opened his mouth to relieve the tension in his face and adjusted the focus of his mind so that the nightmare of the sleeping woman was foregrounded and Noma's visage blurred ever so slightly. The woman believed that her spirit was in the shadow of the evil forest in Orun, running silently and sweatily in circles around a clearing she could never escape because Shigidi had imagined a solid boundary within their shared dream. There was a look of panic in her spirit's eyes, manifesting the state of her consciousness as she slept fitfully on the bed. Shigidi withdrew the fingers of his imagination, allowing the handshake of their consciousness to loosen. The barriers of the forest disappeared, and the woman dreamed her spirit back into her body. On the bed in front of Noma, the woman's body twitched.
There we go, she said.
Noma beckoned to him again with a finger. Shigidi angled his head, the supple clay flesh of his shoulders yawning to accept the motion as he stepped forward, trembling with both fear and desire. He only paused for a half step when he saw the mouthless woman he had been sent to kill start to char and evaporate on the bed, the bright red and black ash of her spirit absorbed into Noma's skin in wide geometric arcs like a magnetic field.
Too late to turn back now.
Shigidi's eyes were fixed on Noma's hills and crevices, and how the dim light seemed to bend at her body's whims. He climbed on the bed, ignoring the ash and the faint smell of smoke. She reached out and put her hands into his trousers with authority. Her touch was wonderful. He had never experienced anything like it, not in all the hundreds of years that had passed since he had been created. She pulled him close so that her lips touched his right ear, filling him with an alien heat and desire. He felt tense, ready to explode.
Olorun Almighty, how can any creature be so beautiful and terrifying at the same time?
Tell me, Noma, what is it like to be with a woman like you? He asked in a breathless, eager whisper, betraying himself.
Her laughter was genuine, wild and all-encompassing. It made him want to laugh too to validate her mirth, but all he could do was take in short, sharp breaths. She pushed him back onto the bed and scooped a handful of ash from behind him, letting it fall through her fingers like sand.
You insult me, Nightmare God.
The ash continued to fall. Haven't you seen? I am not a woman, she said, placing her hand on her chest. I am so much more. And when it comes to sex and the power it holds, there is absolutely no one like me. He could barely contain himself as she dragged his trousers down and sat astride him, lowering herself in a slow, gentle motion. He felt his reality bifurcate, separated clearly into all the moments before her and all the moments after her by a single stroke of unbelievable pleasure. He gasped,
"Ah!"
His consciousness had become a tornado, and he was caught in it, spinning madly and losing his ability to tell the difference between flesh and spirit, dream and reality. The world spun around him and blurred into a grayish nothingness that pressed against him from all sides. And then his body started to disintegrate and smear into the gray haze that was all-encompassing, leaving only the green, him-shaped clump of spirit particles. At that, something like fear spiked inside him, but it was subsumed so far below all else that it barely registered. Instead, as Noma continued to ride him, there was an intensifying mix of joy and wonder and pleasure, and so much more than could possibly be coming from his own body, that he began to think that he was getting a glimpse of omniscience. It was pure, unadulterated freedom. He moaned. Suddenly, he was all at once the smoke-filled air of Obalende and the verdant hills of Idonri, the fresh sea-salt air of Victoria Island, and the whitish-yellow kaolin craters of Ilori, the swampy fog of Ogun Waterside, and the frigid metallic din of Apapa. The spread of him engulfed every spirit he had ever encountered, experienced every dream he had ever constructed, inhaled every breath he had ever pressed out, and loved with every heart he had ever extinguished, until it stopped. He had unfolded completely over Yorubaland, like a cloud. Just as he began to understand the scope and the cost of the gift Noma was giving him, he was suddenly withdrawn, dragged back to himself with the violent efficiency of a recoiling whip. He could not contain it any more. He gave a guttural shriek as he peaked in a corybantic explosion of sensation and light. So much light. The light became unbearably bright, and the urge to cover his face overwhelmed him. But he had no body in that instant. He was all spirit, exposed, enlightened, afraid. I can sense my own fear. His body slowly reconstituted itself, scaffolding around the green core of his spirit particles, into a form that was familiar but not, in a world that was now no longer expansive and abstract and nebulous, but as firm as consequences. Swiftly, with his eyes still closed, his hands flew to his face and traveled down, collating organs, limbs, and features, making sure the pieces were intact and where they should be. He was the same, still made of Olong's clay, but better. Much better. No longer the squat legs and arms, but sleek, muscular limbs, and a chiseled jawline that even the most artistic hands in ancient Il-Ife would have envied. Noma had remade him in her image, manipulated his body the way she manipulated her own spirit particles, and given him the fundamental uniform of the succubitic independent spirit agent. Beauty. He opened one resculpted eye, and then another, before removing his lengthened, broadened arms from his face to see Noma standing naked by the window overlooking the lagoon and smoking a cigarette. A diffuse line of orange light smeared upwards into the dark sky above. It was dawn. "Did you enjoy that?" she asked quietly, turning to face him. She looked pale, her cheeks sunken and drained. Her skin was wrinkled and lined. Streaks of white that hadn't been there before ran through her hair. This cost her. It cost her a lot. Shigidi sat up naked in the pile of fine ash. He opened his mouth to speak, but the unfamiliar vocal cords failed him. So he sat, jaw bobbing with croaks and wheezes, trying to wrangle words he couldn't seem to herd together. He simply nodded his head. "Good," she said, flicking the cigarette ash through the window without looking. "I'm glad." The upper rim of the sun appeared on the horizon, splaying bright white into the sky and casting Noma in a silhouette. She took a long drag of the cigarette and exhaled a wide, swirling plume of smoke before continuing. It isn't easy being a freelancer in this business. It's dangerous being alone. And ever since my sister, I have... She stopped and took another drag of the cigarette, so that the burning end flared bright crimson and accelerated toward her fingers. I haven't had a partner for a long time, but tonight something seemed right. You seemed right. So I took the chance. I hope I was right. We could achieve so much together if we worked together. I hope you will stay with me. She threw the cigarette away and walked unsteadily towards him. Will you? Her hips had lost some of their swing, but he still thought she looked beautiful, if more vulnerable. She was lessened, having given so much of herself to his transformation. The familiar look of loneliness he'd seen in her eyes was still there, perhaps even enhanced now by the hollow circle surrounding them. And he was drawn to that loneliness even more because it finally seemed like she was being completely honest with him. No artifice, no games. Shigidi did not want to be alone either, being so newly reformed. He wanted to be with her, to learn how to navigate the world in this new form. How could he not? She was powerful and beautiful and free, all the things he had longed to be. But she was lonely and afraid, too, just as he was. She needed him as much as he needed her. He wanted to say yes, but the words wouldn't come. He looked down between his legs at the ash that had been landscaped all over the bed, and using his fingers, still shimmering green with recently rearranged spirit particles, scrawled into the ash in big, ungainly letters. Yes.